Welcome to the Judge John Hodgman podcast. I'm Bailiff Jesse Thorne. This week, Apocalypse Row. Carrie brings the case against her husband, Philip. Philip argues that should an apocalypse occur in or near their rural Georgia town, they should head for the nearest Walmart. There, they can take advantage of the large stock of food, sporting goods, and other post-apocalyptic necessities. Carrie disagrees. She says the Walmart will be clogged with people, and they should head for the hills and live off the land. Who's in the right and who's in the wrong? Only one man can decide. Please rise as Judge John Hodgman enters the courtroom.
Law 1, you will obey orders without question. Law 2, punishment shall be swift. Law 3, mercy is for the weak. Law 4, terror will defeat reason. Law 5, your allegiance is to the Judge John Hodgman courtroom. Law 6, justice can be dictated. Law 7, any person may challenge for leadership of the courtroom. Law 8, you will not get it. Only I am the judge. Swear them in.
Please rise and raise your right hands. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God or whatever?
I do.
Yes.
Do you swear to abide by Judge John Hodgman's ruling, despite the fact that really what you should be doing is trying to curry the favor of the ancient and unspeakable ones?
Yes.
Yes.
Very well, Judge Hodgman.
Good afternoon or morning, whatever time it is in your part of the apocalypse, Philip and Carrie. You are in Atlanta, is that correct?
Southwest Georgia.
We're in a section of the country that we call Alaflorgia, Alabama, Georgia, Florida.
Oh, I see. Yes, you do live in a strange other country, a lawless land where borders are ill-defined and a man and woman have to live on their own wits. Is that not so?
That's so.
Right.
It's very accurate.
Before I begin, can either of you identify what motion picture and novel I was paraphrasing when I came into the courtroom?
I cannot.
No idea.
No idea. That was General Bethlehem from The Postman. Have either of you seen The Postman?
I have seen The Postman.
Will Patton's character, General Bethlehem. You didn't recognize that, did you, sir?
I did not.
When was the last time you saw The Postman?
Probably about 7-8 months ago. I still didn't.
Months ago are never words that I associate with the question, when did you last see The Postman?
Apocalypse months are really important time markers.
I would imagine so, because time goes very slowly after the apocalypse. Mm. Wow, so you saw The Postman 7 or 8 months ago, and you still did not recognize the words of the lunatic General Bethlehem. All right, good to know. Is that in your survival bunker, sir? A copy of The Postman?
It is not, but it will be.
I should hope so.
Don't feel too bad, Philip. I was going to guess The Blind Side.
I think that they do that in The Blind Side as an homage to The Postman. Carrie, you are the plaintiff, the complainant. Tell me the nature of your complaint.
Philip and I do spend a lot of time talking about the apocalypse.
Well, what husband and wife doesn't?
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, it's nice to have a married couple back on the podcast. It's been a while.
Well, we're married for now. You know, the end of this podcast might change things. I don't know.
You are, as good survivalists are, you are obviously utter pragmatists.
It's indeed.
Right.
But generally, I agree with all of his planning. I mean, he's very capable. He's very protective. And honestly, in most any survival situation, my plan is basically to stick next to Philip because I'm useless. But one of his favorite pet ideas is this immediate militia takeover of the Super Walmart. It's the last place I want to be right now during peacetime, and it's a terrible idea during a crisis. Everybody around here has guns. I have a gun. Philip has a gun. Our 10-year-old son has a gun. Everybody's got guns.
Right.
And everybody's obsessed with Walmart as well. So in our city, that'll be 30,000 frantic people with guns heading to Walmart, and I just think that that's a foolish idea.
Okay. Now, let's just go back a little bit. There are many things in your statement that I want to talk about. First, Philip and I talk about the apocalypse a lot. Let's talk about that a little bit. What kind of apocalypse are you concerned about?
any kind, really. You know, sometimes it's a zombie apocalypse. Sometimes it's a governmental meltdown.
Right.
Sometimes it's some kind of plague situation. It's not out of the question.
Philip, may I interject just for a moment? Are those all the scenarios, or are there any other scenarios that are concerning to you?
No, I think that's pretty much it.
Okay.
What about if a huge African-American teenager comes to stay with a well-meaning white family?
You're talking about that movie. Are you talking about The Postman again?
Yes.
I think the plan would still be great for that situation as well.
Let me just set you both at ease. There will be no zombie apocalypse. That's not going to happen. Based on my research, the only things that will be coming back to life during the apocalypse will be taxidermied animals, and they will not get very far due to their being nailed down to boards. But no, I don't think that there is going to be a zombie apocalypse. I understand why a lot of people like to think about a zombie apocalypse, because it is a powerful metaphor for the utter derailing of human civilization into sheer brutality and the wish fulfillment of getting to shoot your neighbors in the head. But the reality is that under any other circumstance of apocalypse, governmental meltdown, economic meltdown, and I'm using the term apocalypse here loosely, we're talking about a collapse of civilization. And the reality is, if there are any other scenario in which civilization collapses, you're not going to need zombieism in order for people to be monsters to one another, as you point out, because everyone you know, including your pets, have guns. Now, Philip, you are a current or a retired member of the armed services?
I am not retired, but I am a veteran.
Okay, and what branch?
In the Army.
And what is your current rank or your rank when you were no longer in the Army? Are you active? I'm not sure, but
no, I'm not active anymore. I've actually been out since the end of 2002.
Well, thank you for your service.
Thank you, and I was a sergeant when I did get out.
And it says here that you are commonly referred to as Sarge.
Yes.
All right. What sort of firearms do you have in your home?
You want the whole list?
Well, tell me the ones that it is legal for you to own. You don't have to talk about the other ones.
We've got a handful of shotguns, some dating from the 60s up to the 90s. We've got a 1895 Winchester 32, 9mm handgun, 45 handgun, some 22s, and a BB gun.
And I presume you are proficient in all of these arms?
The ones that are currently operational, yes.
All right. Take the ones that are not operational and bury them, because they are not going to help you. When the apocalypse comes, Pawn Stars will be canceled. You're not going to be able to make money that way. Carrie, which of these guns is yours?
I have some kind of pistol. Hold on. It's called a Taurus Millennium?
It's called a gun?
9mm.
A trigger gun? Let me look at it. Where's the name on this thing? Where's the brand name?
It's a Taurus.
A Taurus.
I don't know what that is.
As in a Ford Taurus? Is that what you mean? Taurus? T-A-U-R-U-S?
Yes, I shoot a Ford Taurus. Yes.
It's the Ford Taurus of guns.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It's the one that I could pull the trigger
even
on.
It's a good, easy-to-use, affordable gun for a suburban family worried about the apocalypse.
I wouldn't call us a suburban family, but for my purposes, it works. I've never had to actually use it, though.
And your son, Sarge Jr., he's 10 years old. What does he shoot?
He has a .22 rifle.
And you guys go hunting and stuff?
We do target shooting currently. He's still learning. We've been through safety stuff with him, but he's still learning how to aim and shoot.
I don't doubt that as a former Army sergeant, you are giving him the best possible instruction in the care and responsibility of owning a firearm, correct?
Correct.
Right. Do you have any other weapons in the house? Longbows, crossbows?
Do you have a sword?
Half broken off bottles? Ooh, a sword. Please tell me it's a samurai sword.
It's not a samurai sword.
Full disclosure, I think it came from a Renaissance fair, so I'm not sure of its use.
Even a Ren fair sword, in a pinch, can go through the gut of the head of a cannibal gang who's invading your home. That's basic Army training, is it not?
That is.
Right. So I would say, just based on this so far, Carrie, your plan with regard to sticking close to Philip/Sarge should civilization collapse is also my plan now. So please send me your address as soon as possible. But Philip, let me talk to you a little bit more about your plan. You want to take over the Walmart.
Correct.
Okay. Tell me a little bit in your own words about your plan.
The idea is basically we are a stone's throw away. I look at the back of Walmart every time I walk out of my house.
Right.
Getting there, my neighbor who is on board with me in this plan, we can get there and just kind of get the ball rolling. The Walmart itself has enough to sustain 30 to 50 people for about a year and a half. There's backup power generators. Everything is basically handled except for security going there, as opposed to getting lost in the woods and you have to think about everything, security. And so that's the general basics behind my idea.
How have you come to the determination that it could support 30 to 50 people for a year and a half?
Actually guessing.
Okay. That's fine.
But he also, I mean, this is his case to argue, but he also has a friend who's an insider and kind of has some statistics and such.
Oh, you have a man or woman inside?
Yes.
And given that it's a Walmart employee?
It is.
So they very well may be locked inside. Not only are they inside, they may not be able to leave.
Right.
Just a little leftist union humor there for you. Okay. You say you have a neighbor who is on board with your plan?
Yes.
Is he the sort of person who doesn't recognize the U.S. flag if it has tassels on it?
not exactly.
All right. So how many people, you say it could support 30 or 50 people, right?
Right.
How many people do you have lined up so far for your survival gang?
I've got about 12 or 13 that are willing to do the initial, and then their family members. These are 12 or 15 guys, and then their family members, kids, and whatnot. So right. Probably near to 30.
You have 12 or 15 guys and their family members?
Right.
Have you discussed this plan with them so far?
In parts to various people.
Okay. But like casually over beers while shooting at things? Or like have you like rented out a conference room at the local Radisson and invited everybody by to show them your PowerPoint presentation?
Don't fool yourself. We don't have a Radisson here.
Sorry. What would it be?
We have a Moultrie Inn.
Okay. But are you sitting down, everybody? I just want to gauge the level of your seriousness. Because right. You've obviously given it some thought.
Oh, definitely.
So you have in your mind picked out 12 to 15 family members, leaving presumably another 10 to suffer and die. And have you broached this subject with them seriously?
With my neighbor, definitely. He's a really good friend of mine.
What is your neighbor's name?
His name is Chip.
Okay. Yeah. Chip, I'm sure, is completely on board. Does he have a family as well?
He does.
All right.
Including five children.
So Carrie, you're maybe you don't want Chip in the bunker because his kids will eat you out of Walmart and home.
His kids are delightful. However, I should add that his wife is completely on my side, to the point where last week she told me in a private text message that we could leave the men, take the children, and let them die in Walmart.
All right. Here's what I want to hear from you, Carrie, because frankly, you know, Phil has military training.
Yes.
He's already done recon via his inside operative of the Walmart.
Upsettingly, yes.
He's talked it over. Perhaps even more upsettingly, he's talked it over with Chip.
Yes. Yes.
And he's obviously got some plans to do it. Tell me, A, why his plan is bad, and then, B, what the alternative would be.
Okay. A, the plan is terrible because Walmart is literally the biggest building in our city, and it will be the first place that at least 80% of everybody in this town will think to go to. I think that Walmart is so big that it would be impossible to actually defend for any decent amount of time because you would just have to be constantly shooting people. And if in a situation where humanity is becoming scarce, the last thing I think we should be doing is killing off the remaining people. We should be trying to either help each other or at least stay far enough away from each other not to hurt each other.
How is going to Walmart and then having to fight and shoot other people any different than going to Walmart on a normal day?
It is not. Okay. It's the exact same thing.
Okay.
Worse on Sundays.
Phil, this raises a good point, which is I can certainly understand your plan in a vacuum, And I am in a vacuum, a hyperbaric chamber right now, by the way. So I can certainly understand your plan. And I can certainly understand your plan in the hypothetical situation of a fictional apocalypse, like a zombie apocalypse, where you not only wouldn't feel bad about, but would be obliged to shoot your neighbors in the head. But what would be the trigger event for you going to Walmart? And then what would you do with the people who were already in Walmart once you and your survival clan got there?
I guess a trigger would be things like, I mean, if 8 or 10 nuclear weapons go off in this country in major cities.
Right.
We know that the whole country is, well, we can assume the whole country is just going to go nuts for a little while.
Okay.
So that's one thing that would just be an immediate, oh, now it's time to go.
All right.
Plans in place.
All right, sure. Let's use that then. Let's say there's a major attack on the United States, and you are convinced, you hear that that has happened, and you are convinced that civilization is going to collapse.
Right.
At that point, I can't imagine you're the only person in Southwest Georgia who has thought of this plan. So you and your clan are going to hit on Walmart. Probably there will be other loosely organized clans converging on it at the same time. And there are going to be people in there who are just shopping who haven't yet heard the news that civilization is over.
Right.
What's job one?
Job one is to create a little bit of a ruckus probably in the back to try to herd people into leaving, as many as possible that will actually leave.
He means a violent ruckus. That makes me upset.
Like a flashbang or something. Not.
You know what? I'm going to save yourself from explaining the point-by-point tactical strategy you have for clearing and securing the Walmart, because for two reasons. One, I was never in the Army, but I can imagine war isn't pretty. And any description of it is not going to sound good.
Right.
And two, at that, you know, if in a real situation and civilization has collapsed, people are going to be making some very hard choices, such as sending their neighbors who are innocently shopping to their death by clearing them out of the Walmart by making a ruckus. And three, it will make you sound like a domestic terrorist. So I don't want this to happen. I appreciate that you're describing a hypothetical situation and you've given it a lot of probably more high-level tactical thought that would in a survival situation keep you alive longer than my unwillingness to talk about it would keep me alive. But I'm just gonna save you from yourself and just say your plan is to occupy Walmart.
Correct.
to get as many people who are in the Walmart, let's say, to voluntarily either leave or join your group.
Correct.
Okay. And then to secure it against the other people who might be coming for you.
Correct.
And then live there for a year and a half. And then hopefully society will have rebuilt itself and absolved you of your crimes.
Correct.
And what happens if you clear the Walmart and society doesn't end up collapsing?
Then I'm probably in trouble.
I hope you factor that into your plans. Okay, so Carrie, I've heard that argument as to why Walmart might not be a good idea. What alternative do you suggest, realistically?
Realistically, in the short term, I've thought about taking over or grabbing an RV or a bus, loading up.
Why does everything involve taking over or grabbing or commandeering or looting?
I wouldn't have to steal an RV. My parents owned a couple of RVs.
So
I would go out and grab one of their RVs.
You would go over to their house and create a ruckus and then force them out of the RV.
My plan is really just for in the initial attack of whatever it is, just to get away from the chaos. Because I feel like no matter what's happened, the most dangerous thing is going to be frightened groups of people.
Yeah, but don't you think so many of those people will also be taking to the roads? How will you navigate to wilderness in an RV on roads that are clogged with, other cars?
You're right on that. And that
I was going to say Mini Coopers, but I don't think you have that many of them down there, do you?
We have one. One lady owns one. She's trying to sell it right now. It's probably a good deal right now.
That could be your escape pod.
Philip would be the navigator in that situation. Honestly, I'm a photographer. I'm useless. I know I'm useless.
But Philip, also known as Sarge.
Sarge.
And I have some evidence that you presented here of Sarge sitting with his rifle in a Jeep Wrangler painted green with his shotgun. And it says Sarge on the side of it.
Yeah.
This is your Jeep Wrangler, sir?
It is. There's a sword in the back seat, too.
Thank you. I did notice that you have an extra can of gas strapped to the outside.
Right.
Looks pretty good. You keep it in good condition. You painted it yourself. You put Sarge on the side of it.
No.
I actually bought it like that.
Oh, is that why they call you Sarge?
No. Can I tell the story? Okay. Quickly, Philip was at a bar, and somebody came in and said, "Dude, I saw a Jeep with your name written all over it." And Philip, because you know we all talk with those accents around here, and Philip said,
"Like what,
really?
surfer accents, dude?"
Yeah, that's yeah. How we talk.
Yeah.
And Philip was like, "You saw a name a Jeep looks like me?" And he was like, "No, it literally says Sarge on the side. You have to go buy it." So he went and bought it. That
Wait,
day.
Philip, your first thought was, "It's a Jeep that looks like me." Like, is it a Jeep in the shape of my head?
Yeah.
So there's another Sarge in town?
There is not.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Based on this picture of you with a gun and a sword and his Jeep. What is this huge smokestack that you've put onto the side of the Jeep?
That's the intake, so you can drive the thing almost underwater.
I like the way you think, Philip. You're going to take this with you, right?
Correct.
I think this thing would be a lot more useful than an RV, don't you?
I do.
What else is wrong with Carrie's plan?
Okay.
I think the biggest thing is the fact that if you head off into the wilderness, you've got everything to worry about immediately. Food, unless you happen to have food storage and MREs and hanging around your house, which some people do.
But may I point out, what you're basically asking the Walmart to do is do your stockpiling for you. And what you're doing is you're trading the convenience of not having to stockpile your own chemically preserved food in vats at home for Walmart doing it. And the price you're willing to pay should civilization collapse is the murder of your neighbors, some of whom may be coming at you, and some of whom may simply be trying to buy a giant vat of mayonnaise. I'm just pointing that out. You could have right. All that stuff.
I figure Walmart inconveniences me anytime I have to go in there. So a little give and take would be nice.
I don't think Walmart is going to bear the suffering of your commandeering. You're turning yourself into a General Bethlehem. Yeah. And you know, I mean, you might not recognize his words, but you know what I'm talking about. Having watched the postman within 8 months. Carrie, where is it you're going to go? What place have you staked out in the wilderness that would be safe?
I can't say that I've staked out a place, but we live in an area that's got a lot of uninhabited land and a lot of places.
Excuse me, Carrie, uninhabited by man.
Oh, you are so right. I'm sorry, animals.
If this is Southwest Georgia, what do you have down there, Philip?
Oh, bears.
Bears.
Panthers. Snakes.
Georgia panthers. Georgia snakes.
Well, we also have a lot of
pterodactyls.
No pterodactyls. Alligators galore.
Skunk apes.
So we have apes. I think we call that the Yeti. What do we call that here? I don't know. Yes.
Do you have a cryptid in your midst? Do you have like a Bigfoot type creature down there that I should know about?
We have a friend who would probably be going with us that thoroughly believes that we do.
Oh, is it Chip?
No, it's John.
Different friend.
Yeah, he has a website dedicated to the hunt for Bigfoot.
Well, we'll table that for another discussion.
please. But my point is that there's plenty of possibility and likelihood that if we drive for a day, we can easily find a hunting cabin that we wouldn't have to kill anybody to take over. And then we would have shelter.
But what if you do?
I don't know. I'm telling you, I am so useless in this situation. I just don't want to go to Walmart.
I think that's a perfect place to stop. I know everything that I need to know in order to form my decision. I'm going to my survival chambers, and I will get back to you shortly.
Please rise as Judge John Hodgman exits the courtroom. Carrie, it seems like a bad decision in a time of crisis not to trust two men, best friends, named Chip and Sarge.
I agree.
Sarge, do you genuinely believe that you could hold down this amount of territory or that you're enough of a leader of men to create an army large enough to hold down this territory, sort of Red Dawn style, but without the benefit of already being the quarterback?
I think it's very possible. I think barricading is pretty easy. I'd like to also add that Carrie has zero sense of direction, so not knowing where we're going and all up in the wind, it just doesn't sit well with me.
That's why you're saying where to go, just not to Walmart.
Carrie, Philip, please rise as Judge John Hodgman re-enters the courtroom.
You may be seated. Look, guys, I think about this a lot, and I wrote almost a whole book on this entire subject, which is now available for your purchase for your survival bunker, called That Is All, which is very much about end of the world and end of civilization type scenarios. The rest of the book is filled out with information on wine and sports. But I do truly think about it because I think that it is, on the one hand, literally not completely implausible that something unexpected like an attack or a calamitous event might force you to go find shelter somewhere. I think about it a lot because as an asthmatic person, I'm basically an albuterol cyborg. If I don't have access to my inhaler, I will not last 3 days. I am that much a creature of civilization. And I think about it beyond just the literal to the metaphorical, because when you think about it, the end of the world is a little bit like death. You know it's coming. Evidence is mounting that it's coming more quickly. And yet a lot of people choose to deny it for a long period of time. So I welcome this opportunity to engage you in this conversation in all of its funny moments and in its darkest moments, because you are actually talking about some dark stuff. And as I say, Carrie, you have a good husband in such a situation because he actually has training in the hard things that might have to happen should civilization collapse. That said, however, Philip, I find a tremendous flaw in your plan, which is that for someone who prides himself, as I presume you do, in taking care of your family and in your tactical know-how of taking over a Walmart and the fact that you have a Jeep that can go underwater, you are ridiculously not particularly self-sufficient for a person who owns as many guns as you have. If your survival plan, and this goes to you too, Carrie, because your first thought was, well, steal an RV. If your survival plan essentially comes down to, I will pillage and loot in the most sensible place to pillage and loot, then you are the zombie apocalypse. You are a ravaging monster looking only to consume. You are basically the Occupy Wall Street of the post-Ragnarok landscape. You think the way they think society owes them a living, you think society owes you survival. Do your own stockpiling and take a bath, hippies. The reality is that if you were to take over this Walmart under any circumstances, it would mean a lot of bloodshed. And I think that doing that in front of your wife and son would change you darkly forever. I think that Carrie's suggestion is bad in that it lacks specifics and it lacks certain practical considerations. An RV is a protection from nothing. And I would suggest, since you have a prosperous photography studio and wish to take this seriously, that you consider a couple of options. That you create, essentially, your own Walmart. You might just rent a warehouse somewhere in a semi-industrial part of your state. I bet you have them. You can stock it up with all the MREs and giant vats of Utz cheese balls and anything else you might want from Walmart just for yourself. Lock it up. No one's going to be in there. No one's going to know that it's a Target. In fact, there's no bigger Target than a Walmart than Target, right? And you can go have your wonderful, all the pleasures of living in a warehouse for a year and a half without the moral quandary of having to murder people to do it. Even though we are talking about a situation in which civilization would collapse, I think it is not a situation in which you want to abandon civilization completely and become monsters in order to survive. Therefore, this court orders that you abandon all plans to take over and occupy the Walmart before you are thrown in jail and look at some property, at least as a fantasy, in the area in which you can create maybe just a nice country place and you can put some canned food in the basement and you know you can get there with your Jeep if the worst comes to happen. This is the sound of a gavel. Judge Sean Hodgman rules. That is all.
Please rise as Judge Sean Hodgman exits the courtroom. How do you feel, Carrie?
I feel great. I think that's actually a pretty phenomenal idea. And for some reason, it never occurred to Philip or I, as far as I know, to actually do something like a warehouse or a second home.
Philip, do you think this might save your marriage?
I think so. I never took the moral side of things when in doing the plan. Just kind of leave that in the back. But now when it's put in your face, I kind of go, you know what? Carrie may have been right.
Could I add something in response to that? I don't want anyone to think that Philip is a bloodthirsty, crazed killer man. He's a really wonderful husband and father and takes good care of us. So please nobody call the police on him.
No, and let me just jump in again. I certainly don't think that about you, Philip. And I think that you are, as I say, you're thinking about it in the abstract. And
right.
A lot of people won't even take that step. And you know, a lot of people, if some emergency comes to their door, which they do not expect, whether it is the end of the world, the 700 ancient unspeakable gods, or just a terrible flood, are going to find themselves caught up short without any idea of what to do. So I don't think it's wrong to create scenarios, but I do think it's important to just think through realistically, do I want to murder my neighbors? And I clearly, you do not have that in mind.
Correct.
Right.
What do you think Chip is going to make of this whole thing?
I know Chip. I think Chip was really into the taking over the Walmart thing, though, right?
He was.
Yeah.
He's a pretty rough guy.
Might benefit from being adopted by an upper middle class family who could teach him the benefits of discipline and playing offensive line on a high school football team.
Probably.
Great. You should send him a copy of the movie Waterworld.
Thank you very much for submitting to my authority today.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
I'll see you when you have finally kitted out your bunker. Please send me the coordinates.
No, definitely.
All right, good. I'll come over and we'll share some powdered food.
Fabulous.
Judge John Hodgman will return in chambers in just a moment.
Hello, I'm your Judge John Hodgman. The Judge John Hodgman podcast is brought to you every week by you, our members, of course. Thank you so much for your support of this podcast and all of your favorite podcasts at MaximumFun.org, and they are all your favorites. If you want to join the many member supporters of this podcast and this network, boy, oh boy, that would be fantastic. Just go to MaximumFun.org/join.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by the good folks over there at Squarespace.
Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time. All in one place, all on your terms. Time, Jesse.
Have you heard about this Squarespace Blueprint?
No. Tell me all about it.
Squarespace Blueprint lets you choose from a professional layout and build a website for your product or your service or your creations from the ground up. You can accept payments, including Apple Pay, among other things. It is all seamless and easy and comes out gorgeous, whether or not you went into it with big time skills. That's what Squarespace is all about, helping you express yourself and helping you share your work with the world.
Go to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to www.squarespace.com/Hodgman to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is also brought to you this week by Made In.
Oh, when you're trying to buy cookware, it's like there's so many questions, so many choices, so many pros and cons. But you should know, Made In has only pros. Pros like Tom Colicchio, Nancy Silverton, Brooke Williamson. That's right, I changed the meaning of pro from good things to professionals who use Made In, because they do. Professional chefs love Made In cookware because it's got so many pros.
Can I tell you something about Nancy Silverton, one of the Made In pros?
Yeah, I would love to hear it.
My friend used to work for Nancy Silverton, or one of her restaurants. And not only did she adore Nancy Silverton, but Nancy Silverton personally catered her wedding.
That's a real pro move, if you ask me.
Yeah, just like getting Made In cookware. These are people with taste. if you get my double meaning.
I do.
This isn't a Johnny-come-lately company. This evolved from a 100-year-old kitchen supply business, and they work with multi-generational crafters to put together every single piece. So includes carbon steel, stainless clad, plateware, glassware. I know, John, you love all that stuff that you have in your cabinet.
Yeah, I got the glassware. I got the plateware. And I definitely love that carbon steel. And I've got, and I love their stainless steel. It's got exactly what demanding chefs and I dare say demanding judges look for when they're buying cookware.
And you don't have to find a kitchen supply store. They sell it online. It's delivered straight to your door with the quality that the pros use.
And can I just say, it's at a fraction of the price of other top brands. That's for real. This is really good stuff and it's really affordable. And yet, as affordable as it is, I'm going to tell you this. Judge John Hodgman listeners get 10% off full-priced items from Made In. For full details, visit madeincookware.com/JJHO10. That's madeincookware.com/JJHO10.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
It's always good when you know the family's going to stick together.
I'm sorry, Jesse, I couldn't hear you. I'm eating this can of beans.
Shall we clear the docket, Judge Hodgman?
I should hope so, yes.
Here we have a letter from Kyle. He writes to say that his friends and he often have a very spirited debate on the portrayal of zombies in film. Specifically, the debate centers on the speed at which the zombies move. I'll spare you the further paragraphs and paragraphs of email and cut directly to, so which is it? Should zombies be portrayed moving sluggishly or quickly? It is indeed.
Well, it's forever to be a debate because A, it's entirely fictional, it's never going to happen, and B, great arguments have been made on either side. I would say that a lot of people would expect me to be the purist, but you have the two greatest arguments for both sides, which are The Dawn of the Dead and The Dawn of the Dead, the original and the remake. Both extremely good films. Dawn of the Dead, the remake, largely credited with introducing the fast zombie. And I think if I had to choose, I probably would watch New Dawn of the Dead again, not for the fast zombies, but Ty Burrell's amazing performance as the jerk bag, which is not in any way to take away the beauty of the original Dawn of the Dead. I just mean to say, slow zombies and fast zombies can live together because neither of them can eat the other. So there.
Okay, here is a question about emoticons from Quinn. Quinn writes, my fiance and I feel that the emoticon of a tongue sticking out, made with a colon followed by a capital P, can be taken two ways. One way is mild bemusement or small victories. For example, I picked up some ice cream for you, tongue sticking out. And the other way is that of disappointment, such as, we are out of ice cream, tongue sticking out. However, if a hate statement is not intrinsically happy or sad, he feels that the emoticon defaults to the happy meaning, while I feel it defaults to the sad meaning. So, if he were to say to me, my diet starts today, tongue sticking out, he would mean it as, hooray, I've begun my endeavor to live a healthy life. I would interpret it as, Bummer. I've got to stop eating so much ice cream. So what is the true default meaning of this stupid thing?
Well, normally in questions of linguistics and etymologies and definitions, I would call upon Emily Brewster of the Merriam-Webster Dictionary. But in this case, I feel not even she would have an answer. These hieroglyphics are still new enough and not well documented enough to have standard, stable meanings. They're constantly being redefined as languages, but this time at the speed of internet. And indeed, I think much like fast versus slow zombie, this is a situation where either argument could be argued till the end of time and make perfect sense, and no one would ever possibly win. However, unlike the argument of fast zombie versus slow zombie, I do have an injunction to make here, which is neither of them win. Please don't ever use that emoticon or ever emoticon ever again. I think it's completely juvenile and really makes me not take what you write seriously. So stop doing it.
That's all we've got on the docket today. All I would suggest to our audience is that they remember to send us in their cases at Hodgman@MaximumFun.org and that they visit MaxFunStore.com to check out our new t-shirt and poster. MaxFunStore.com.
MaxFunStore.com.
It is a place of commerce.
It is a domain of commerce where you can buy the new Judge John Hodgman poster and t-shirt. The change is complete. No survival bunker would be complete without a Change is Complete bunker poster and bunker t-shirt. You can wrap the t-shirt around an MRE and use it as a potholder after you have heated it up in your microwave. You can use the poster as kindling for your in-home fireplace. Why don't you go check it out? Time is running out because the world is ending.
The t-shirt is excellent at separating curds and whey.
Perfect.
The Judge John Hodgman podcast is a production of MaximumFun.org. Our special thanks to all of the folks who donate to support this show and all of our shows at MaximumFun.org/donate. The show is produced by Julia Smith and me, Jesse Thorne, and edited by Matt Gourley. His great podcast, by the way, is called Super Ego. You can find it in iTunes or online at GoSuperEgo.com. You can find John Hodgman online at AreasOfMyExpertise.com. If you have a case for Judge John Hodgman, email us and be sure and include your telephone number. The email address is Hodgman@MaximumFun.org. If you have thoughts about the show, you can always comment on it on our message board, forum.MaximumFun.org. We'll see you online and next time right here on the Judge John Hodgman podcast.